Well, it may not feel like the 1st of November to many people. Georgia is in the middle of a serious drought. 90-degree days and a lack of rainfall have affected areas around the state. The National Drought Monitor Center has found that more than 50 Georgia counties are currently in extreme drought, and that's led to severe water restrictions for some places. Here to tell us more about the drought is Jack Kapp. He's the chief of the Environmental Protection Division Watershed Protection Branch. Hi, Jack.
Good morning.
And also with us is Jonathan Erdman. He's a senior meteorologist with the Weather Channel. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning, Celeste. Nice to be here.
It's good to have you. So I wanted to dig a little deeper into these designations. Like, extreme is the second worst designation, right, Jack? The top is exceptional?
That's right. Now, that's the United States Drought Monitor that does that, and that's certainly one of the indicators that we track in our state.
But the state of Georgia gets to decide how bad a drought is in terms of measures that need to be taken. Is that correct?
Right. So what we're doing is, you know, we track the climatic conditions that are present, and then we have response levels that we can initiate under our rulemaking authority to impose restrictions. So we certainly aren't saying there is or isn't a drought. That's scientific information that other folks present. We look to see what we can and should do in order to protect our public water supplies.
So, Jonathan, what does it mean, really, to be in a drought? I mean, is that a certain number of days without rain?
Well, Celeste, this is pretty amazing for this time of year. Basically, we've seen parts of Alabama and Georgia go 3 weeks or more without a single drop of rain, which, if you think about it, you know, the Gulf of Mexico is what, just a half-day drive away. The Atlantic Ocean is a half-day drive away. How on earth can we go this long without this much precipitation? So generally, a drought is two different measures. One can be kind of a short-term drought, what we call a flash drought, and it's just based on rainfall. And then there's long-term droughts, what we have particularly in California, where the water supply has been so deprived of rain and snowmelt for so long that the water supply remains low, even though precipitation has recently been there over the last month or so. So there's two types of droughts. This one is really been a flash drought, but now just due to the severity of it, it's becoming more of a long-term concern.
What is triggered, Jack, when you find out that an area of Georgia is in drought? Are there official mechanisms that then go into place? Is that when you start saying, don't wash your clothes at 2 p.m. in the afternoon?
Yeah, so the first thing that we do is we track all of these climatic indicators and see how it's impacting public water supplies. And we do that by monitoring those conditions as well as having communications with our public water systems. As was mentioned, because we've had such a lack of rain, we actually imposed a drought response level one almost 2 months ago based on the conditions in 53 counties in northwest Georgia. That required all of those public water systems to engage in a public information campaign to all of their customers using a variety of media to educate them on the situation that we're in terms of drought and to encourage them to reduce water usage. The next level would be imposing additional water restrictions, and we are actively talking about that in the agency as to whether or not we need to increase the drought response level to impose additional restrictions.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Jack Kapp from the Environmental Protection Division and the Weather Channel's Jonathan Erdman. We're talking about the ongoing drought in Georgia, and we wonder if you're feeling it. Are there water restrictions in place where you live? Let us know. You can tweet us now at OSD Talk. Jonathan, how did we get here? Is there a larger weather system similar to what most people know of as El Nino that sort of caused this drought?
Well, Celeste, it's interesting because really we're coming off of a year which was actually quite wet over much of Georgia in 2015, and that was due in part to a record-tying El Nino last year. Now what we're seeing, though, and it's really kicked in over the summertime, is just these massive precipitation deficits across the southeast and the Tennessee Valley, particularly North Georgia, Alabama, and the Western Carolinas. And that is due in large part to the jet stream typically moves farther to the north in the summer. So in the summertime, you're pretty well restricted to just clusters of thunderstorms that occasionally can soak your yard, but maybe a mile away, your friend's yard may not get soaked at all, those typical isolated thunderstorms. And then it's quite stunning to me that if you take a drive to the Eastern Carolinas or even down to Savannah or St. Simons, they've had two tropical cyclones. They had Hurricane Hermine hit landfall in Florida and then move up into the Carolinas. And then, of course, recently Hurricane Matthew. So they, of course, have been very, very wet. So you just have this staggering precipitation contrast from the Eastern Carolinas to, unfortunately, the extreme to exceptional drought that we have now in the Southeast.
So, Jack, we spoke with agricultural climatologist Pam Knox back in August, and she was talking about the weather conditions in North Georgia as well. Take a listen.
The northwest part of the state was the first part to go into drought, and they've had some tremendous problems because the dry spell hit right when the corn was supposed to be pollinating, and pollination requires a certain amount of moisture, and a lot of the corn crops just didn't really set any kernels in their ears this year, so the farmers have lost most of the corn crop there, whereas in other parts of the state, the timing was a little bit better.
So, Jack, I realize you're with watershed protection, but at what point does the state have to start thinking about managing damages from what has become kind of an ongoing drought?
Well, certainly we've seen, you know, impacts to the dry weather agricultural use. You know, a lot of the agricultural use that we have in our state is irrigated acreage. And so that's one of the reasons why Georgia is such a tremendous agricultural state. As we've got the southwest part of the state that has a great resources for water, and they irrigate their crops. And so they're not as impacted by this kind of situation. What we're focused on in the rulemaking that we authority that we have in statute from our legislature is protecting those public water supplies.
And where the irrigation comes from, you mean? Where is the irrigated water coming from?
No, irrigation would typically come from farmers that have their own wells or ponds or withdrawals from surface water.
And we're not yet at the place where the drought is affecting those levels of the water table or the ponds?
We're in situations where a lot of those folks still have good productivity from their wells. Again, most of our agricultural use is in the southern part of the state that isn't quite as impacted as the northwest part of the state.
So, Jonathan, what are we to expect? How unaverage are our high temperatures at this point and the precipitation or lack thereof?
Well, we'll start out with the temperatures, and I had been meaning to almost ask our Georgia audience, you know, are there any swimming pools still open in the Atlanta area? Because this is truly incredible to start out November with highs in the upper 80s in North Georgia and also pushing some 90s in the deep south. That's setting some all-time November record highs. So just the persistence of this is something that we typically see in droughts. You know, once the ground gets dried out, is just a feedback mechanism. The air becomes a few degrees hotter because you're not having to evaporate moisture from the soil. There's just no moisture there. So the ground heats up more, heats up faster. So what we're seeing the temperature-wise is just shattering records across much of the South, and we've seen that over the last several days. Now, as far as precipitation...
Wait, before we moved on to some precipitation, do we know when a break in those temperatures might come?
Well, we're going to take the top off of those temperatures later this week, fortunately. So, you know, we'll see temperatures recover, maybe still say in the 70s and 80s, but certainly nothing like upper 80s to near 90 that we've
but
seen.
But 70s
the last
and 80s
days.
Is still exceptional for November, isn't it? Is it not?
It's still warm. We should be starting to talk more as the month goes on, talking about 60s. Maybe some 70s eventually instead of these 80s. You know, the 80s eventually gets pushed down to Florida. So, yes,
okay.
this is quite unusual.
All right, let's move on to precipitation then.
Well, in the short term, and by short term, I mean in the next week or so, we don't see a whole lot of relief, unfortunately. What we really need is a pattern where we really tap that Gulf of Mexico moisture and just pump it into the southeast. And there's really nothing, you know, looming on the horizon for the next week or so. And one small concern going into the winter is that we are headed toward the opposite of El Nino, which is called La Nina, which is a cooling of the equatorial Pacific waters in the eastern Pacific. What that really means, as one potential driver of this, the atmospheric circulation, is that we tend to trend drier than average over the winter months in the southeast rather than wetter. So it's almost, in some ways, it's almost the polar opposite of El Nino. So that's not terribly good news, but again, that's only one driver of the atmosphere. So we'll see how the winter and spring months treat as far as precipitation is concerned in the southeast.
So Jack, in the minute or so that we have left, give us some advice on things that we can do that maybe aren't quite too painful, but could help.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And so, you know, in a nutshell, things that you know, you and I and your listeners can do around our home is checking for and repairing for leaks that are either inside or outside the house. A really simple thing is just don't leave those taps running. You know, turn off that tap when you're not using it. You know, brushing your teeth, shaving, all of those kind of activities, rinsing your food off. You know, turn that tap on, you know, do what you need to do, and then turn it off right away. We're getting near the end of that green lawn season for those folks that really like having that really lush lawn. That grass is normally going to go dormant over the winter, and we're at that phase. So think about turning it off, or at the very least, go out there and see what you're sprinkling.
Yeah.
And if you're sprinkling your road, you don't need to do that. And you need to get those things tuned up. But we're at that at that time of year where, you know, it's all right if you stop irrigating that lawn, it's going to go dormant.
Jack Kapp is the chief of the Watershed Protection Branch in Georgia, and Jonathan Erdman is senior meteorologist for the Weather Channel. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.